It's recording is in progress, and it's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Tell the Damn Story.
We're here
with veteran writers Chris Ryan and
Alex Simmons, right
they
here.
Are,
and,
yes,
and
Alex Simmons.
Yes, but we have a guest. We have a guest, don't we?
We have a guest. We're going to hold off on the guest for a second while I tell you that, ladies and gentlemen, you're here to gather a little knowledge about writing, and we celebrate the trials and tribulations, the ups and downs of writing, so that you don't have to. And we give you advice and hope that it helps you tell your own damn story.
That's right. Just remember the title of the show.
Today we have help. Ladies and gentlemen, are you going to do the introduction?
Yes,
Alex,
of course.
Oh, of course. Let Alex do the introduction.
You know, she found us, all right?
We're going to talk about that later in the episode, too.
We have a wonderful new friend, new face. We just talk all over each other. We have a wonderful new face and a new sparkling talent from the Midwest. Not actually Midwest, from Texas. It's Ms. Jessica Thompson. Yay, Jessica!
Yay! Thanks for having me.
How are you?
Good. I'm great. How are you guys?
I don't know. I don't remember. What day is this?
Where are we? Who am I?
Yeah, exactly.
We're getting there.
Jessica writes the kind of stuff that I like really love, at least a category within the kind of material that I love. Mystery stories. They've been my thing since childhood. And Jessica writes mystery stories, but she writes them in a particular niche that I am rather curious about.
Oh, good.
Jessica, what is that niche called?
So most of my books are culinary cozy mysteries.
But they're all... six times fast.
So they're like, so most culinary cozy mysteries, like, talk about food a lot, have however many recipes, either in the back or after chapters. And then they're usually cute and they're like clean. Mine aren't that cute. They're a little more on the exciting end of culinary cozy mysteries. But yeah, they have recipes after the chapters. So my books, a little more exciting. Recipes after like half of the chapters, and then she's a caterer, so we're talking about food. So basically we talk about chocolate snickerdoodles, and then there's a recipe for chocolate snickerdoodles.
That's interesting.
And where do they fit the mysteries in? How does that work into the context?
So it's basically like she's at an event and someone dies. So the first book I wrote, A Caterer's Guide to Love and Murder. She's catering a wedding, and her sister is the florist, and the groom's an ex-boyfriend.
Oh.
Someone dies. Maybe I shouldn't say who. I don't know.
Don't give it away. Yeah.
Someone gets poisoned, but then, so the police are suspecting her sister. So that's why she's, oh boy, I better do something.
Figure this out. What's your lead character's name?
In that series, it's Violet.
So Violet is a caterer. Her sister is engaged to somebody.
Her sister's the florist.
Florist.
Okay. And during
the
this.
The ex-boyfriend is the one who got murdered.
Because they're like family friends, next door neighbor.
This is a cozy mystery.
Yeah.
Which means all the violence takes place off stage, correct?
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
that's fine.
So there's poison. So there's a little barf. But not on screen.
No heaving on screen. Okay,
that's
come on.
Right.
You got to keep this clean and neat. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So there has to be some death and some other things to be motive for murder.
Death and okay.
But
cozy is code word so that they know there's not going to be ultra violence on the page.
Yeah, it's
so
not.
We
gritty.
Have that.
Yeah, right. It's not gritty. Doesn't have any sex or swear words.
I think that phrase, I saw a clean romance. And that's what signals the reader or the potential book buyer that there'll be romance. Again, off stage.
Yeah. I've heard that too. I've also heard it called like sweet romance or just kisses or I don't know.
So
I have to ask, my curiosity here was with cozy romance or safe romance, or so you can hold hands, you can hug, You can kiss, maybe?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, where is the line drawn? I'm just curious here.
Once as it they gets fall sexual, onto the bed, the chapter ends.
Yeah, they say fade to black, or they also call it close the door. Huh. You go in the bedroom and you close the door.
And does the window open and the curtains are blowing? It's like the old movies? I see. Yeah, okay. No. Okay. All
we
right.
Cut to a scene of a train going through a tunnel. No, I don't know. I don't know.
Wait a minute. My heart. Okay.
So
you said that there were two culinary cozy mysteries that you've written. One was, give me the title again, please.
Okay. So the first one was A Caterer's Guide to Love and Murder. And then the second one was a holiday one, same characters, but A Caterer's Guide to Holidays and Homicide. And then in January, the third one comes out and it's A Caterer's Guide to Valentine's and Violence.
I think the girl needs to get into another business. Yeah. Sounds dangerous.
But my most recent one, I wrote one that wasn't in the series, so it's more of a classic mystery. Still clean, but like Agatha Christie, we're not talking about food the whole time.
I want to stay with this series for a second.
Okay.
The idea of The Caterer's Guide gives, oh, I know that series. I like that series. I want to see. So it's good marketing trend. The only part I don't really, or that I want to get a little explanation on, is the recipes that are included. Mm-hmm. Are these things that showed up in the narrative?
Yeah.
Like they puzzle out the mystery, snack it on snickerdoodles, and then there's a recipe for snickerdoodles. I got it.
So like the scene opens and she's making apple strudel.
Right.
So then at the end of that scene, or end of the chapter, there's a recipe for apple strudel.
That's very cool. Now, to help Alex with this.
Well, thank you.
He's a fan of the old Robert B. Parker Spencer novels. And in the first several of those, Spencer, while he was trying to figure out puzzles, would cook something, usually drinking a bottle of Amstel Light while he was putting this together. But it would be maybe a paragraph of description, and you may not get all the recipe or all this. So this is a little more helpful.
This is if Julia Childs and Jessica Fletcher cross paths.
Exactly.
There you go.
Jessica Fletcher, that's like the hallmark quintessential cozy mystery.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh no, there's a spot of blood on the actor's shirt. Well, he's
gets me with the Jessica Fletcher, and I'm starting to feel a little bit nervous about Violet here, is wherever Jessica goes, somebody gets robbed or dies.
Huh?
You cross the Atlantic, someone gets robbed or dies. With Violet, she's in the catering business. Wherever she goes, someone gets robbed or dies.
Yep.
Do you do that? Does that become a conscious thing for you? Is it something you go, oh boy, how can I get around this time? Or is that a part of the appeal?
I mean, both. Lots of different cozy mysteries do it different ways. They call it the Cabot Cove effect because of Jessica Fletcher. So it's like, Cabot Cove must be murder capital of the world. So then...
Only when she's there. She's not there, everybody's safe.
Exactly. When she takes the trip to New York in one episode, someone dies there.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's why book number two is set like in a mountain house. So yeah, we're going to different locations. And some series like call attention to it, like, man, death just follows me around. But I was hoping to just not.
Okay. All right.
Like everybody just be cool. I don't know.
Cool.
And Violet's last name?
Whitehouse, because she's married to a Jake Whitehouse.
So Violet Whitehouse's adventures can be followed with A Caterer's Guide to, and then Love and Murder, Holidays and Homicide, and coming in January or February?
Yeah, January.
January, Valentine's and Violence. Do you have plans for a fourth, fifth? Are we going to continue, Violet?
I'm going to go at least through number five.
That's cool.
And then there's also a bunch of short stories in Cozy
Mystery.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask you about that.
Oh, yeah.
You've done anthologies. You've been a part of several anthologies, it appears.
Yeah. So I'm putting together my second one now. I put together one that was family friendly woods. Campfire stories. It's Beyond the Woods, a supernatural anthology. So that was just like, you know how most spooky stories that like read around the campfire or for Halloween, they're either like insanely gory or cutesy. You don't get a lot of in between where it's like Corey. Spooky, but not insane.
Yeah. So we're going for Corey here. Not insanely acute, but gory, but not gory. Okay, it's Corey. Okay.
Yeah, so we nailed it down as spooky. So it's not horror and it's not cute. Spooky.
Chris, you can speak to that.
It was my friends and I. We put together an anthology of spooky stories.
Spooky stories.
Beyond the Woods.
I do a series of part anthology, part magazine. We do short stories and author profiles and stuff like that. And it's called Soul Scream Anthology. And when I write to or pitch potential authors, I say it has to be at most a soft R.
That's
so
good.
What I'm asking you is, what rating would you give the stories in Beyond the Woods?
I would say PG-13.
PG-13.
I don't know. Okay, yeah. I feel like ratings have changed since I was a kid. So maybe PG-13 when I was a kid.
Yeah. Okay. Because there's a little more. They might curse, or there might be a thimble or a shot glass full of blood. Is the most I'll stomach.
Yeah, exactly.
In my stories.
So we've got thimble or shot glass full of blood, and we called it light deaths.
Yeah. There you go. Light deaths. That's nice.
And then we just cut out swear words like eight and up, old enough.
Yeah. Ours would be about 14 and up. Yeah. 14 and up. Yeah.
Yeah. So that book was middle grade, but most of mine are adult, clean adult.
Sure. That's interesting. You're really marketing it to a different crowd, different readership.
Yeah.
And
it was just like a project with friends.
And are you satisfied with it?
It's not selling great, but
it's selling.
It seems like people really like it.
That's fun. That's cool.
But like you said, it doesn't line up with my other readers.
Well, that's okay. It could line up with your readers who are buying for their children or their nieces or nephews and that kind of stuff.
And it's still clean, so I guess I'm getting those people.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Great crowd to go for.
It's adjacent to your pilot series. Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm curious, you said you did this as a project with friends. Have you published your works or have your friends or your team published the majority of your works?
No, that was me trying to get my friends published.
Nice. Very nice of you. Very nice.
Nice.
So now we're all Amazon bestsellers. So
put
that on your resume.
Your other works? Who published some of your other works?
Who publishes?
It was. So as of like last week, I was publishing with Darkstroke Books, and they're like Southern France, and they do mostly ebooks. But we have parted ways. It was most mutual, but I was like debating, I can't make a decision. So I was like, should I leave? Will I regret it? But then they were like, okay, I think we should part ways. And I was like, okay, you made the decision for me. Okay, great.
So who will be carrying Violet in the future?
So I'm going to republish them, just indie publish.
So you are going to go indie publish. That's great. Yeah. Okay.
So now,
take
I guess
the rain.
I'm hybrid now, but now I'm going all indie.
Okay.
Do you have an indie publishing company name that we should mention?
I do Bittersweet Mysteries.
Bittersweet Mysteries. Uh-huh. That's interesting. Okay.
Everything I write, I tried to write something else. It still came out as a mystery.
Interesting. So, I'm curious about that. When did you find that mysteries were your things? Has it always been? Or is this something that developed as an adult? Or how did that come about?
I think I read lots of things, but once I started writing, then everything came out as a mystery. So I always liked mysteries, but it wasn't like the only thing I read.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it's the only thing I write. So, so it started out as just writing culinary cozy mysteries.
Right.
But Then I would try to write a different short story, and nope, still a mystery. And a teenage project, nope, still a mystery. And the short stories in Beyond the Woods, a supernatural anthology, still mysteries. So, sure. And there are other Jessica Thompsons that are authors, but they don't write mysteries. So I think I'm just going to embrace it, label myself as a mystery author.
Let's talk about the other Jessica Thompsons. Do you have trouble marketing your stuff with that? I have a little experience as a Chris Ryan. There's a Christopher Ryan out there who wrote Sex at Dawn. Sometimes people think I'm the Sex at Dawn guy.
Yeah.
And I admit to nothing. Close the door. Yeah, so I have to explain that that guy is
a different guy.
Archaeologist or something like that. I forget what he is.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's good. We're writing fiction over here. I'm not sure what that guy's writing. But yeah. So it's always a marketing thing. But once you get established in a genre, that kind of faded away.
You had a question that you were going to ask her, and I think it pertains to the shoot shovel and...
Yeah, I wanted to go over that way. I actually have two trains of questions there. Yes. One, shoot shovel and shut up doesn't sound like a cozy culinary clean romance mystery. So can you tell us what it is?
Not a cozy. Yeah. It's more like a classic mystery. So like an Agatha Christie, where it's still pretty clean, except there's deaths, and it's not cute.
Okay, that's interesting.
Again, I went adjacent to my readership.
Slowly building your empire, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So what was the chicken and the eggs question? Still didn't get to my second track there, because I want to talk about how you developed that. But did the idea for the story come first, or the decision to move and try a slightly different area than the culinary code? Which one came first?
Probably the idea to go in a slightly different area, because before I had sold anything to any publishers, it was like, which one's going to get picked up?
Okay, yeah.
So it was like, okay, I have this manuscript that's the culinary cozy mystery. How about I also try this other type of mystery? So this one, this Shoot, Shovel, and Shut Up has been like my back burner project for years, because then the culinary ones got picked up. So then I had to write more culinary books. And then that one got pushed to the side. But this year it was like, okay, that's it. I'm putting it out because I love this story. I think it's better than my others. Maybe don't tell my
interesting.
Other
well,
we want no, no.
But you'll to each their own.
I'll put
whoever,
it out of the episode.
Likes, whatever, as long as you're buying.
I'll cut it out of the episode. Don't worry about it.
Shoot, shovel, and shut up.
You got to say that title cautiously too.
Yeah,
it's just so fun. It looks like a straight up Western from the cover.
Yeah, it's
Western mystery.
Yeah, it's. I think they call it neo Western.
Where would someone who lives in Texas get that kind of information?
So it's set outside Austin.
There you go.
And on a ranch that's surprisingly similar to my parents' Longhorn Ranch.
Longhorn. Okay.
So pulling from experience.
Yep.
Did you just use that to paint the background, or did you borrow some characteristics of people from the ranch to populate your story? How much of the ranch is in Shoot, Shovel, and Shut Up?
careful.
It's really just the setting. And the people are totally different. My parents are way cooler than the like dad that's in this book.
That's excellent.
Right, it's the holidays are approaching. Make sure you say nice things.
Why don't you give us a quick teaser on the plot, and then I want to talk to you about where it can be read and talk about that for a little while. So how about a quick plot teaser?
Well, it's a riff or a distant retelling of Agatha Christie's Death Comes as the End. So I got a little bit of the inspiration came from there, because it was her book. That was her one book that was not set in her contemporary time period. It was like ancient Egypt. And it's this whole family on a like compound all working together. on a big property. And I was like, wow, that sounds a lot like what I'm doing, because I had built a house on my parents' ranch. And that's the dream for a lot of Texans, because there's this strong, like, my land is my legacy thing. So I was like, oh, that needs to be a book in modern day Texas on a modern day cattle ranch. Now it is. And so it's my main character is Bria. Her husband just died a few months ago, and she's moved back to the ranch. And she's trying to settle in, trying to be the person she used to be. You know how you can't come home. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's that. She's trying to settle in and be the person that fits in on the ranch. While dad brings home a new fiance.
Oh, so mom's dead too.
Yeah, mom died 5 years ago. So that actually ties in.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. And then, so dad, end of chapter one, dad brings home a new fiance and a new deputy, because he's the sheriff. Because I needed some way for the law to bend around them a little bit.
Okay.
Bend the law? Nah, please.
No.
That never happens.
So because dad's the sheriff, no one really wants to argue with him that much, because he's the boss. Anyway, so he brings home a very handsome new deputy and a fiance. So then...
mystery ensues.
Yeah, mystery ensues, because there's a big argument, and it's implied that it's not the first time we've had this big argument over the property. But now dad has someone else to leave the property to in his will. So he's, I'm cutting you kids off.
Oh, really?
And people start dying.
Yeah. Which, oh, wow. Folks start dying.
There we go.
Yeah.
Why can't you say around here? Because folks start dying real easy. Okay.
Yeah.
So people can order the book, Shoot, Shovel, and Shut Up. But on your website, we also have Read on Vela.
Oh,
do you want to talk to us about the Vela experience, please?
Sure. Yeah, Vela is strange, but it's a new, they call it episodic way to read books. And it's, so I put it up there as one chapter at a time. So you can read one chapter and then pay a couple cents more and read the next chapter. So Vela is strange. It's really like authors are hopping on it because they are giving out bonuses. So I probably only made $30 having it readable on Vela, but just that, Amazon gave me hundreds in bonuses. So it was like, oh, now it's worth it.
Okay, interesting.
You're traveling in the footsteps of Alexandre Dumas.
Yeah.
Because that's how Musketeers and some of the others were published in installments.
Yeah,
a lot of those, like, one episode in each newspaper, and then you have to wait a week.
Well, Dickens as well, but he was his own editor, so we don't even want to go there. Did you write the entire thing and then just dole it out, or were you like just a couple of chapters ahead?
That would stress me out. I wrote the whole thing and then got it edited and made sure my ducks were in a row. Oh no, I forgot this thing, I better go back and add it. Yeah, I wrote the whole thing and then doled it out while I was, again, getting my ducks in a row to publish the ebook and the paperback. I could put it on Vela while I formatted.
Okay.
Test the borders too.
You would say you had a positive experience with Vela?
Yeah. So I'm going to do it again. If they stop offering bonuses, I might not. But for now, at least, because it's new and Amazon's really trying to push it, they're doing big bonuses.
Okay, that's interesting. There you go. All right. I want to talk, I know your publishing imprint is going to be Bittersweet Books, but there's also Bittersweet Book Tours. Is that
you? We should talk about that. And because Chris and I do interviews with artists in terms of their methodologies and material and things that they've done, but we also want to do business-oriented interviews too, in terms of techniques and things like that.
Great.
We should definitely do this with this nice weird lady and this nice person here.
It seems like a lot of authors have, they offer some kind of author services too. So I was like, I will too.
I want to go back to you as an author. When did you start? what was your first experience like? And in terms of, in particular, rather, what challenge did you face that you had to overcome in order to help you be where you are at this point?
I would say my biggest challenge was just myself and my preconceptions, because I thought being a writer is too competitive. I would never make it. I don't have something special to add. Because just writing like Shoot, Shovel, and Shut Up, that's a big market. It's competing against all the other mysteries. And I feel like that's a big pool. Mm-hmm. But then when I found Culinary Cozy Mysteries, it was like, ooh, that's a smaller pool. And it takes the skills of writing a mystery and the skills of cooking and recipe writing. And then you have to be able to do both. So it was like, this is a place I can carve out for myself. So I finally got over my doubts and started writing. It also helped that the first Culinary Cozy Mystery I read was awful. It was so bad. It was so bad. I memorized the worst line. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
The worst line in the whole book. It was, it looked like the ongoing feud was still going on. So I was like, I can do better than that.
Wow. Wow.
So that's the line that made me throw the book across the room and start writing.
Okay. All right. And had you written any kind of material before that? Had you done writing in any way, shape, or form other than letters or emails or things?
Scientific papers and persuasive writing in college. Not really, but I was an avid mystery reader. Was like, I know I'm not going to make it right away, but this is an avenue I'm going to start walking down.
Okay. Okay.
It took a while, but yeah, it got published eventually. And yeah, that's Cater's Guide to Love and Murder is my first attempt at a book.
And when did that come out?
Oh, that was 2020.
2020. Oh, what month? Just out of curiosity.
It was in September.
Oh, okay. September. So we've gone through at least a few months of adjusting the fact we were going to be indoors for a while. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And luckily, I was already writing it. Like, I finished the rough draft in 2018. So lots of time to figure out how to be a writer before I had to start meeting deadlines and
Well, let's talk about faster. That. How did you go about figuring out how to be a writer? How many rewrites did you do? What was your bar for, this is not good enough, I have to do this? How did you sort all that out? Because it's a different journey for every writer.
Yeah, it's definitely different. I feel like it was an easier road for me because I'm an outliner.
Oh, okay.
I'm an avid outliner. Oh, man. So I knew the beginning, the end. I knew every character and like how it looked like they did it, but how they didn't actually do it, and who did it, and who, and how it looked like they didn't do it, but then we realized that they actually did do it. I know all that before I write the first word. So I feel like I have to rewrite less. So it's more just like editing. So that first book, plotted the heck out of it, and then I wrote it, and then it was like, do I even have a book? Because yeah, I think it's great, but I'm a little partial. I went out and found a content editor that I didn't know, never met, still haven't met her. Anyway, it was like, here you go, tell me if this is a book. And yeah, she said, yeah, this is great, and it's a change these little things, but there was no big rewrite.
I'm going to push on that a little bit, because it sounds to me like most of your rewriting happened in your planning stages.
Yeah, in my head.
All right, so that's legit. Joyce Carol Oates wrote, I think she's on 1,000,000,001 books now, but she did a talk one time that I attended, and she said that she runs, and when she starts running, it's in her head, the opening scene of whatever book she's, and she runs and thinks her way through the book, stopping in her head and fixing something And then the next day she starts again. And
that's
she
great.
Does that until she can watch the entire book in her head as she's running. And only once she can do that a couple of times, only then does she sit down and start writing. But that's even though it's in her head, it's still writing and rewriting. So I'm interested in finding out, you said in your head, for me, it's always index cards. I like to write notes and then rewrite them and that kind of stuff. What's your writing and rewriting process in your head, outlining? How does that work? Because you have a lot of things to keep straight. Uh-huh. And when they fall in, the false clue, the real clue, how do you do all that in your head?
Yeah, especially because I like to write an intricate mystery. Like, plot is the top priority for me. So yeah, I'm working on it in my head until there's too much and I can't hold it anymore. So then I'll start working in like a notebook and I'll just, I don't know, write down the outline. And I kind of outline using the save the cat kind of methodology. So I'll also use, they have a one page worksheet that's like little boxes. So it's like index cards, but all on one piece of paper. So while I'm writing it, I have the one piece of paper, but I also have pages and pages of this little box is these three pages. So this is almost like just notes. Remember what you're writing, Jessica. But then over here is more like this and has to include this and this and this and that.
Right. Little box might say like 25 minutes means three pages of planning. Yeah, that's good.
And then there's still stuff I'm discovering as I'm writing, like what his boots look like.
But that's all fun stuff. That's great.
Yeah.
And you know where you're going. So that's what I hear from every plotter, is that I like to know where. My wife, if she wrote novels, she would definitely be a planner, because she doesn't really like the whole GPS map thing. She wants to, she doesn't always trust it. She wants to know exactly where she's going.
Yeah.
I was like, you planner, look at you.
Yeah, especially with a mystery. I don't know how people write mysteries without knowing where they're going. Apparently people do it, but man, I wouldn't be able to.
Whenever I hear a mystery writer say that, in my head, I'm saying they're not owning up to the 12 rewrites they did. Because you have to, right? You have to. Every sleight of hand magician wants you to think this is the first time they ever did the trick. They've done that trick 150 times, right?
Yeah.
At minimum.
Nope, so, I'm just the natural.
Yes. When do you know you're finished planning and you're ready to write?
Ooh, yeah. Usually there's like, I'll get it down to one thing where it's okay, either the breakthrough clue or the cute thing that's like the first line and kind of the last line, because I like to go have the last scene mirror the first scene. There will be like one holdout and I'm walking around just thinking about it all the time, and then someone will say something cute, or I watch a mystery and then it might not be what happens in the mystery, and it's like what I thought was going to happen, and it's like, that's it, using it. And then I'll get in the groove and actually sit down.
Very, very cool. Alex, we can't hear you, bro.
Oh, muted.
Yes, I was muted. That's because there was some extraneous noise here. How long does it take you finish writing the book?
Actual sit down typing the rough draft is probably 3 months, maybe a little less. Because
how long in here?
Oh, that's a long time. I don't know. I got a lot of irons in the fire, kind of all the time. I don't know how to quantify that. Like, when did I start thinking about it? I don't know.
You were saying 3 months, and then you started to say something else. So
just editing. Lots of editing after that. Okay. So like my editor will always say things like, you use this word way too many times. Okay. And like the content edits I get, usually it's like your plotting and pacing is great because I already did it all, but I need more character development. So she'll say, oh, this character, I need to know more about this character. Or this character needs a hobby that's not related to the story. And then that's when they really pop off the page. Once I add that, my editor told me to, and then they're like a real person. So I need to work on my character development.
I hear you. Chris and I talk about that all the time. Matter of fact, Chris, I got to say this because I did. When I talk to my students, I give them a list of character bio questions, and it's 40 questions long. And they always go, oh my God. You know, I said, you know, I got a friend who has a list that's over 165 to 170 questions. So no, yeah. This is lightweight.
Always use them, you know.
That's beside the point. You have them.
Yeah. The more you think about it, the more it informs that character. If the guy had to get a newspaper out to buy a pair of sneakers, that's way different person than the one whose divorced father brings him a new pair every week. It's a different person. And knowing those little details inform the character. So, yeah.
Yeah, and even the details that never make it onto the page.
Oh, yeah.
Like, those sneakers will never came on the page, but know about them. Yeah.
So then he's a different person, yeah. In Shoot, Shovel, and Shut Up, the main love interest, there's two, but one of the love interests, he's claustrophobic, and it never actually came up.
That's great. Like,
no. Oh, that's okay.
He's claustrophobic, but luckily he works on a ranch.
Yeah, exactly.
But you'll never
really open
an
airy apartment. He always keeps the windows down in the truck, and he works on a ranch. So it never came up.
Okay. That's great. It's important for, we have a lot of aspiring writers who watch this, and that's an important moment for them when they're like, oh, wait a second. Having all that stuff in my back pocket, all that information, would inform the character, but I don't need to feel obligated to shoehorn it in. It's no reason why that guy, you know, you have to spend a paragraph talking about the claustrophobia he never suffers from. But if there's a sequel, maybe it shows up.
Maybe.
Hey, maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah, but he has a hobby where he makes cheese because they have a milk cow. When we had a milk cow, I was making a lot of cheese because there was a lot of extra.
What?
So that's the hobby that my editor said to add in because it has nothing to do with the plot, but that's what made him a real person. So now that he makes cheese,
I love real. That you were able to pull something from your own experience.
Just stepped on my joke there. That's okay. Fine.
What was that, Alex?
I said, is he Gouda at it?
He does actually make some smoked Gouda in the middle. Because that's Bree's favorite cheese. So he has this thing where he like remembers what everyone's favorite cheese is.
Wow.
Because I wanted him to be thoughtful.
There you go. That could work in a couple of different ways too. I'm not even going to dwell on that. But yeah, that in and of itself is interesting. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. See, Jessica is showing us how you reveal character indirectly through cheese. That he remembers... Yeah. What says a lot more about him, you know, and it's
exactly cool. That's what he spends his mental energy on. Is
there you go.
Okay. That's going to be the title of the episode, Cheesing It Up with Jessica Thompson.
Yeah, there you go.
Alex, anything else, sir?
No, I think we've covered quite a bit. I'm sure if we stayed at it, we would come up with more, but I think for now, yeah, we've covered quite a bit. You've given us a lot to think about. And I would say, just once more, remind us of the books that you have out and the one that's coming out.
Oh, thank you. All right. My latest book is Shoot, Shovel, and Shut Up. It's like a classic mystery, and it's available on Amazon. And my culinary cozy mysteries, or my other cute mysteries with recipes in them, they're A Caterer's Guide to Crime. That's the series name. Mm-hmm. And the newest one will come out in January. Probably January 11th. And that's going to be A Caterer's Guide to Valentines and Violence, because it's a Valentine's Day one.
And what are the two that are out already?
What was that?
What are the two that are out already?
The two in that series that are already out are A Caterer's Guide to Love and Murder and A Caterer's Guide to Holidays and Homicide. So that'll be good as fall rolls around. So
yeah,
Love
I like
and Murder
that
kind of set. Yeah. Love and Murder is set early fall, so like now, and then Holidays and Homicide, obviously it's December. That one's probably my best seller because everybody loves Christmas.
Death. Death and Christmas. Yeah, okay, there we go.
Yep, And food. Everyone loves food too.
Thank you so much for joining us today, for finding us, for researching and coming across that connection.
Yeah.
And thank you for talking to us about your books and about Bittersweet Book Tours. And we will definitely have you back again.
Great.
Yes, keep follow up.
See how you're doing.
Some clients.
Yeah. Thank
maybe,
you.
Maybe this... closer to the release date of your next book.
Oh, yeah.
Good
yeah,
time.
I can schedule you for January.
There you go.
Great.
Yes.
We'll do a pre-Valentine situation. There you go.
Yeah.
Chris, anything you want to say other than what
yes,
you know?
Thank you very much. And thank we will you. Talk to you again. Yeah.
Jessica
Thompson, everybody.
Everybody, yeah. And please give us your comments, your thoughts, your questions. I will put links to Jessica's website in the comments area. So look for that there. But also respond. Let us know what you think. If you have any questions for her, you can write directly to her or leave them for us and we'll make sure she gets them.
And meanwhile, of course, remember, and subscribe.
Yeah, and subscribe. And can subscribe too. Okay, that means the werewolves are invited. Anyway, take care, everybody. We'll see you. Bye-bye, Chris.
Bye.
Thanks.